So, filmmaker Thomas Allen Harris sends his regrets that he could not attend. But we have a great lineup for you. Some of you may know that Thomas worked on this project for over 10 years, and the film would not be here without our amazing team. So, can you guys all come up when I call your name? Ann Bennett, producer. Martina Redwan, cinematographer. Tim Miley, editor. And Matthew Kong, editor. And I'll let the team talk about their work on the film. I'll let the team talk about their work on the film and how they got involved with the project. But first, let me introduce you to our moderator, Nell Urban Painter. Nell is an American historian notable for her works on the Southern history of the 19th century. She is retired from Princeton University and has served as president of the Organization of American Historians and the Southern Historical Association. After earning an MA and PhD at Harvard University, Nell received honorary degrees from Dartmouth, Yale, and others. Nell has written 7 books, including Sojourner Truth, A Life, A Symbol, Southern History Across the Color Line, Creating Black Americans, and most recently, The History of White People in 2010. So let me hand it over to Nell.
Okay, does this work? So we're going to ask our panel of makers each to say a little bit about their actual role in making the film. And perhaps speaking as a historian, I'd like you to also mention how your role might have changed over the time in which this film was made. So, would you like to start?
Thank you. Good evening. And I just want to say, I'm sorry, good evening. There we go. I'm a minister's daughter. I just want to say I'm so glad to see everybody here and see our wonderful team who's come and to support us. And it has been a long journey. Nell, you asked about the sort of changes over the process. It's been a 10-year process, so there have been a lot of changes. I certainly have gotten more gray, and we've been able to really extend our family and made some new family over the years. So it has been quite a journey. But for myself, I worked as one of the producers on the project for the documentary, as well as the interactive producer for the digital and multimedia aspects of the project for Through a Lens Darkly, and for our companion project, which is Digital Diaspora Family Reunion, which is a national community engagement project where we have people share their family photos and their family stories, both in live events around the country and also on online communities as well.
Wow. And I'm Kim Miller, and I'm one of the editors of the film. I started, 2008. And it was and is still a journey. We had over 10,000 photographs that we
moved. Wow.
Well, actually, it was more than 15. And I'm telling you, the stories that you see with just looking at the photographs made it, you can see the reason why it took such a long time, because there's so much beauty and so many different ways that you can tell a story or see a story within a frame. And that frame still speaks to you today. And so trying to get that story and how to get the story and also get Thomas's narrative into the film, it was a process. And I don't know where else to go with that.
I'm Matthew Cohn, one of the editors, and I guess I started as Kim's assistant, and through her through great mentoring, was able to continue as editor. And I'd like to just sort of follow up on what Kim said in terms of maybe working Thomas's personal narrative into the larger sort of universal history that we were dealing with, and kind of finding a way to really speak from the heart and reach out to a large audience when dealing with stories that are difficult to tell and to try to reach as many people as possible.
My name is is Martina Rathman. I'm the DP of the film. I developed a long time ago the concept with Thomas and the visual approach. And it was quite a journey. But more so, it was also a discovery. And shooting this film, I was so amazed to actually realize that nobody knew these stories, that nobody had ever asked these photographers to tell their story except a small group of
historians.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I just got off the plane from Mongolia. A little bit. So that, you know, to me it was a discovery. And over the years, of course, it changed, but not for me so much, because the approach was the same since we wanted to keep it coherent. I guess I better stop here.
Okay, I'm going to ask one or maybe two more questions before we open it up. But I'm going to ask you to start, and then we'll come back this way. Some of you have mentioned the relationship between Thomas's own story and then the sort of historical, in a sense, where Thomas makes himself a representative black person over the years. But to find that balance means that something has to give. So tell us what kind of balancing you did in your role, maybe what you lost or something that you found that you hadn't expected.
That's an easy question.
I'm familiar with Thomas's work, so to me it was never a question that he would integrate his own story. I mean, he has such a rich story that I think it only added to the larger picture of history. But I didn't give anything up, I have to say.
Yeah. I think, you know, just through the process of editing, you're always having to give something up. And putting a sort of a biography into a narrative along with broader history. I think it was really sort of figuring out, in terms of Thomas's voice, what personal stories he needed to tell to best sort of move the overall narrative forward, and what have you left out. And also that also went along the same lines with the larger history. There were certain moments that, you know, he at one point he would want to include to further the story, but would ultimately have to get left out, and just in terms of the photographic history. So is that finding that balance between what worked on the smaller and larger scale?
They have enough information that they could put online from what we cut for years. There's a lot of history that did end up on the floor. And it was about finding that balance between Thomas and the audience and the viewer, and how to get these images, how to get these stories to come alive for the audience. It was all about trying to tell the story for y'all. I must admit, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy because there are so many fabulous stories, so many things that happened in history that needs telling, and that I know that they're going to be putting up online. So I say, please go look, because they're going to have all these just different stories that are coming up that will be told. But you don't want to sit through a 4-hour film. So something does have to be left out.
Yeah, it is frustrating. I came to the project with a background in history. So for me, I knew Thomas, but I really knew American history, so it was always a challenge to make sure that you get those stories that are really most of interest to you, most exciting to you, in this narrative arc, but also that it is a real narrative, that there is a real story with our heroes and our protagonists and antagonists, and so that's always about, as Kim was alluding to. We have so much material which didn't make it into the final film, which are fairly well executed scenes. I know we have, you know, more scenes on the Civil War, on Reconstruction, you know, on segregation, on we have at least two or three different civil rights movement sequences, sequences on the Black Photographers Annual and Pamoinge and various groups, and we know that as working as the interactive producer, you know, always in my head is like, well, okay, well, you know, it has to be a feature film, and so it's going to be finite, but we do have lots of possibilities, and so now we're at the point where our PBS broadcast won't be until 2015. So we've got some time to really figure out, okay, we've got some fairly well-executed scenes that are already almost done. So how do we take those and make those available and accessible so people can really do a deep dive? Mm-hmm. You know, so if they are, you know, really like the segment on, you know, the Harlem Renaissance, you know, how can we share some of our research and some of our elements so that they can really do a deep interactive dive into that content or into the Civil Rights Movement or, you know, into the... one section that we lost, we didn't have much time for at all, was the Black Arts Movement, you know, which is huge. And we did several versions of that. But we know that as we move towards broadcast and we expand our interactive treatments, that those will come out as well.
Great. My last question. This wonderful project has taken a while, and our country has changed from the time that you began or the time that you got involved. And this moment, in fact, our country has changed just in the last few weeks. So, very quickly, can you tell us how the responses you got from other people speaking to you about the film or about your role, how that's changed? So this is be very particular to each of you because you're the people you talk to are different.
That's an excellent question, Nell. Really, just within the past few weeks, obviously, you know, with the issues of racial violence that have been going on just since the beginning of the summer, I hadn't looked at the films since, you know, for almost 6 months. And so when I looked at it again just this past week, it was almost a completely different film for me, mm-hmm. you know, to be honest with you. And looking at it, you know, through the lens of gender and masculinity and image and how we identify ourselves and how other people try to identify us, you know, for us, and how we struggle to identify ourselves. So that's, again, literally, it seems like almost a whole new project, you know, just within, you know, looking at it, you know, after a challenging summer.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had the same experience. One of the things that Renee's Cupp's image of her holding, what's the name of the image she's holding?
Yes.
That speaks through time. Mm-hmm. And your reaction to it in different courses of time are going to be different. Like seeing it now and seeing this image of these men. Really speaks to me. In the time that I was doing it, I was thinking about what was happening in the past and how to bring that emotion up and what do you put next to that image so you can feel the emotion from it. But now watching it now and seeing that it's come alive once again, it's heart-wrenching.
Yeah, I would say along the same lines. I think the last time I saw it was back in February, and people made me comment in general about the film and its relationship to history, but much, you know, I saw it again for the first time last Wednesday, and, you know, comments were very much more pointed in terms of the relevance of the film topically to what has been happening recently, so...
I mean, as a cinematographer, of course, you know, I'm very familiar with how you can use images and how you can interpret the same image with different subtext and how you can use that or abuse that. And I think, I mean, two things. I haven't seen the film. I've seen this one last time at MoMA, and obviously MoMA is such a different crowd, and it's interesting that, you know, just looking at it, which I love, just from the art perspective, because that also it's so difficult to keep these conversations separated yet intertwined, because they belong intertwined, but you know, obviously there's a racial aspect to it. And, but seeing it now, the debate about Ferguson, how images are used, that the mainstream media finally is latching on and also admitting it and discussing it, that I think is interesting in conjunction with the film.
Okay. Well, I, for one, was absolutely outraged that when the New York Times talked about the media coverage and the images from Ferguson, that they did not interview our sterling black photographers. And two of the historians they talked about knew zilch about images. But at any rate, let me turn to you. Please ask a question, make it brief, and make it just really a question. Yes.
It was so obvious.
Please wait.
So it's pretty obvious watching it. I'm a photographer and I'm older. And the similarities of the images, that a lot of the images that were on there that have been on Twitter since day one of Ferguson, were striking. Secondly, with what all of you said about how it brought up this is happening, and look, it's always been happening. I mean, your film was about how it's always been happening, and in my lifetime, through civil rights and feminism and abortion movement, and it's all coming back around again. Now, I'm not saying that I don't have hope, and we all have to have hope, but you, first of all, your film is beautiful, and I taught history of photography, and a few of those people I did not know of, and I want to ask you, how are you all going to perhaps have this become part of curriculums in colleges and high schools? Thank you.
We're, you know, just in that process. Again, this film will be broadcast on PBS next year, 2015, through Independent Lens, and so they already have a whole system of working with educational media and developing curriculum for educators, for high schools, colleges, community organizations, and so that's in the process. But for us, it's really now we really are encouraging people just to watch it, to spread the word, but also to start talking about your own family photographs, your own images. And so by sort of building that momentum, by the time we get to broadcast, people are already starting to decode and to really understand what images they create, what images are created in the mainstream, and what are the similarities and differences. But for us, we're really encouraging people to really start to deconstruct the images that are out there as we begin to make these educational materials and available. We have some things on our website now, but we'll have more as we continue within the next 18 months or so.
In the back? Yes.
This is sort of a political question, and that's in the images here, that was there's Birth of a Nation, and in the perversion that we have on the news and other things, we have another Australian doing that same thing, Mr. Murdoch, who is presented in Australia itself. And I'm wondering, because I keep asking even before Ferguson, does anybody speak on the outside of what can be done to take away his privilege of citizenship in our country and pull those institutions that he has away from him so that he doesn't keep creating this tension and explosiveness?
Well, I think you know we have a lot of power ourselves. I think you know, especially what's been going on this summer, the mainstream media has really recognized the power of Black Twitter and the power of social media, and the fact that if people start a campaign, whether it's through Instagram hashtag or through through tweets or through Facebook postings. That can make a difference. If there's enough trending going on, then people start to listen. Then reporters will be like, oh, what's going on? You know, there are all these things that, you know, what's happening on Twitter? What's happening on Instagram? So it's, you know, for us to affect change, we need to take action. And so it, you know, I mean, power is power, money is money, but, you know, we have power ourselves. So that the more we actually, you know, get out there and, you know, make a blog post and share your thoughts and to encourage others to do so, we can start the change happening on the ground level. And that's, you know, well within our power.
Power to the people.
Yes.
I went to Howard University, and I know that when we were studying photography, they were very clear about our responsibility of the images that we create. And, you know, my mother was 90 when she died 2 years ago, and I have found pictures they weren't allowed to go to regular clubs, and so I see all the pictures of the women's clubs and the places that people went, like Peg Leg Bates, some sort of resort. And then I started to research these things, and I looked on eBay, and I bought a postcard that I'm going to put all the photographs around. But I'm really encouraged from watching this film. It reminds me of the responsibility of, even when you have a home and you have all these precious photos, mm-hmm. that you need to make sure that you're preserving them in a way. You know, it's important for young people. I have two young people in their 20s living in my house, and they don't have any forward-moving images of African Americans in their minds. You know, they don't have people dressed for the occasion in beautiful portraits like Fantasy was making. And so it's really important that these kinds of images be preserved and presented and seen. So I'm so glad to hear that it's going to be on BBS.
That's one of the things that happened to me, like making this film. It made me become more aware of my family and going to my mom and getting stories and going to my aunts to try to get stories from them. And then also I've started like collecting my mom all these photographs and putting them together so we can tell the stories and keep the stories alive and fresh.
One of the things that I really appreciate about the film was how it showed how photography played such a large role within different historical eras, from slavery to the civil rights movement and so on and so forth. So I wanted to ask if at the beginning of the production of this film, which I understand must have been quite a while ago, did you want the different eras to have equal weight within the film, and did that kind of change along the way, and if so, why? Or was it the reverse, and did you want there to be more weight on one era of history within photography, and then it kind of changed into having them be more equal? I was kind of wondering about that.
Well, it actually started without Thomas's voice in it at first. So it was a historical story. And but to bring Thomas into it, it actually started making you saw how people began to be drawn more into the story by relating from him to the photographs. So in process of time, we weren't concentrated on having like a strict set of time for each era. And it was just more about how the story came out. One of the things I can tell you about, which was really important for Thomas, is he's like, I want to turn off the sound, and I want the pictures to tell.
Last question? In the back?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we have two last questions? Okay. Over here, and then
wait,
in the back.
Okay, so just to follow up about your last comment about the picture tone and sound, my question is about the view of our personal lives, whether it be negative or positive, and how, like, because we have a phone that can take 100 pictures in a millisecond, most of my friends are posting on social media positive pictures of our environment. I mean, I for one am not going to post a negative, know, picture of myself, but in this, you know, forum, we see the absence of the black man and the absence of, you know, of our, of who we are in society. And I think, like, moving forward, how would you, you know, bring that, if you had a forum with young people, how would you bring that to them that, you know, you not only portray yourself when you get your paycheck and you look fabulous, but how do you also portray yourself when you're just ordinary and you're not all dolled up?
Just real quick, it's we actually just a couple summers ago we did a youth media institute where we did actually training with young people to around photography. We did that in the Bronx, we did that in Philly, we did that in DC, and it was about documenting our lives, you know. And that's, our lives are bittersweet, you know. There are good days, there are bad days, you know. There are births, there are deaths, and I think as we, all of us, embrace the being citizen journalists. I mean, that journalism, you know, can be quite rigorous. So yes, you know, we'll have the selfie where we look cute and fine, but also we're going to document what's going on down the street as well. So that's part of the process. But it's up to us to check ourselves and say, hey, that's great, but you know, make sure you know, take some photos of what's going on down the street as well.
And pretty much, as we learn from the film, and the camera is a tool. If you have that question, you can do it. You can use that tool. You can use your phone. Document what you want to see, what you want to be put out there.
I agree. I think everybody who takes a picture is also an editor. You know, you edit what you want to be seen in public, and about your life, about your friends, about your neighborhood, about your community.
Hi, I think that's a great segue for my question. I was thinking about how throughout the film we see ourselves through the lens that we choose to portray ourselves. And how do you see today's selfie movement in, let's say, laying a foundation now for, let's say, the next 30 to 50 years, where we're looking back in the future at today. Do you get what I'm saying? I'm not sure if that makes sense. What role do you think that's going to play in terms of shaping the identity of African Americans and the movement of being able to say, okay, I'm a participant not only in my world, I'm framing how I see myself, and I'm framing how I want you to see me and how I want you to remember me.
Shifted in terms of photos were always about the person. I mean, there was always it was a dialogue between the photographer and the subject matter, which clearly is, you know, topic in the film. But that instead of going to the portrait interview, you are now in charge of your own portrait. So I think that the concept is the same; it's just a different performance.
And just lastly, the challenge really for us is how do we preserve this? So we have all these images. Like this weekend I lost my phone for a couple of days, and I was like, all my pictures are on there.
Yeah.
So for us, as far as, you know, how will people look at this, you know, 10 years, 20 years, another generation? Well, it depends on how serious we are about really archiving, you know, about, you know, printing out our images, about sharing our images, about actually, you know, putting together family albums. And so that's up to us. And so we're hoping that projects like these will encourage people not only to take the images, but also to share them and to save them and preserve them. And whether it's, you know, having it on a drive and a backup drive, but also to print it out and also to you know, make art out of it, or you know, we put it in a scrapbook. But there are lots of ways that we need to make sure that this stays, you know, around for generations to come.
Absolutely. And just to close, sorry. Our interactive project is called Digital Diaspora, and basically a lot of the themes that we were talking about earlier is what that project is about.
What we've done with Digital Diaspora is we partner with local organizations, and we received a Rockefeller Foundation Cultural Innovation Fund grant for the last 2 years. And we've been to Queens, where we've partnered with Louis Armstrong Museum and the Cultural Center there to talk about why jazz musicians lived in Queens. They were from the South. They wanted backyards rather than living in Harlem townhouses. And they were closer to the airports to get to their gigs, right? But that community is now Latino, mostly. And so what we do is not only tell some of the local history, but then invite the community to come out, bring in their family photographs, and tell their story. And we come to a theater just like this, and we use a document camera to, you know, sort of to put the image on the screen and for people to tell their stories. And what we find is that people end up having these, you know, connections in the audience, you know, and it's happened in several cities. We've done it in 19 cities now. In Staten Island, we, you know, did, when I did most of the outreach to one audience, but we had, there was a Native American audience that showed up in Staten Island, you know, and that I wasn't aware of anyway. And so, you know, we've done that with the, with Digital Diaspora, and we also cover, you know, visual literacy and, you know, a lot of things, and we have a lot of content that Kim and Matt have edited, so definitely go to our website there. And most importantly, you know, we thank you guys for coming and supporting the film. But please, you know, definitely get the word out on the film. We want to stay here at Film Forum, you know, and have these conversations for you know, another week. So definitely, if you can, Facebook us on Twitter. Our hashtag is Through a Lens Darkly, and our handle is at DDFRTV. So thank you for coming. I want to thank Martina Redwan, our cinematographer, Matt Cohn, our editor, Kim Mill, I'm butchering her. I'm sorry. Kim, our editor, Ann Bennett, our producer, and Nell Urban Painter, our moderator. Thank you. And yes, Sheila Manyar, our associate producer, who did a lot of the research on the film, if you can stand up and give her a hand.
Happy birthday, Sheila.
Thank you.